Hello, and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. As always, thank you very much for stopping by. I'm recording this in the very, very thin window of time that the pets are giving me, that they are willing to be quiet-ish, so that we can have our nice weekly discussion. I don't know if any of you are podcasters out there, and if you have perhaps noisy pets, maybe even you have children, I would like to know, how do you find time to get a nice bit of peace and quiet? I was thinking of putting them in a little box and putting them on the balcony, but the boyfriend won't let me do that, so we do as best we can. Anyway, how are you? I hope you are well. It is a lovely day here, rather spring-like in the middle of January, but I expect that the temperatures will come crashing down pretty soon, because that's the way things are. So, you know what? That's enough preamble this week. Really, I've got nothing exciting to tell you at the moment, so why don't we jump into this week's book? Now, last week, I said we were going to keep on the superhero theme because I like superheroes, but with philosophy. And that leads to the rather obvious book, Superheroes and Philosophy, which was correctly guessed, of course, by Esteve this week. Well done, Esteve, who is a fellow comic book fan. And I'm glad to hear that DC's making good inroads into Spain. So, this week we have Superheroes and Philosophy by Tom Morris and Matt Morris. I'm not sure if they're related. It would seem a weird coincidence if they were not, but I could only find Tom Morris on Wikipedia, so I don't know. Anyway, think about it. There you are. You've been bitten by a radioactive alien Wolverine that's been cursed by a gypsy and struck by lightning, and you finally, after years and years of waiting, have been blessed with superpowers. You can do things no one else can do, and you can do them faster, stronger, better, and in more spandex than you ever dreamed possible. Now, there's only one thing to do. Pick a name, put together a costume, and go fight crime! But why? Ever stop to think about that? I mean, I know I would want to get out there and fight the good fight, emulating my four-color heroes, but why? What is it about getting superpowers that makes so many men and women do what they normally would not do? Fight crime. Why risk their lives, or the lives of those they love, in this never-ending battle against the forces of human and often superhuman wickedness? And for that matter, why should anyone, superpowered or not, bother to do good? It's hard work, thankless work, after all, and despite the old cliché, crime can sometimes pay very, very well indeed. A little digression. I've just been reading the excellent comic book Invincible, which I highly recommend to you. And there's one point where Invincible, our hero, meets up with a villain, and they're talking about this exact subject. He says, why do you keep doing it? We keep beating you up. And the guy says, look, we know. The criminal says, we know you superheroes. You're not going to kill us. You're not really going to do anything. Drop us off at the police, and we're going to escape anyway. Honestly, being in crime is much better than being a hero. And you know what? He might have a point there. At least with superhero crime. So the fundamental question, then, about why superheroes do what they do, it's a reflection of one of the oldest questions in human philosophy. Why be good? And the fact that it is the most popular theme of this book of essays suggests there really is no single, simple answer to that. Mark Waid, in his essay, The Real Truth About Superman, looks at the greatest do-gooder of them all, the Big Blue Boy Scout, and talks about the philosophical journey he took when he reinvented the character's history in his comic Superman Birthright. To sum up, he believes the primary drive that puts Kal-El out in the skies is not so much a desire to help the world, but really to help himself. For only by being a hero can he embrace his true nature. The use of his powers to his fullest is a demonstration of his Kryptonian legacy. To hide that under the bushel that is Clark Kent would be to completely deny that part of who he is. And what about Batman, the poor paranoid loner? When you think of the Bat, do you think of his friends? Probably not. But of all the best-known heroes, he's probably got the biggest cast of confidants, from his ever-present assistant Alfred to the unstable love of his rival Catwoman. Batman has a tangle of friendships that normal people could not sustain, but, you know, that's Batman for you. He always has to be better than the rest of us. In Matt Morris's essay, Batman and Friends, Aristotle and the Dark Knight's Inner Circle, we get a look at the traditional Aristotelian levels of friendship, those of utility, pleasure, and virtue, and how the people with whom Batman surrounds himself fit into these categories. Now, the first family of Marvel get their due as well. Never let it be said that I'm a DC elitist, just a DC fan. Anyway, when Chris Ryle and Scott Tipton look at the Fantastic Four as a family, in this essay, they look at the bonds of family and what that means. I mean, what is it to be family? And how is that bond so different from so many others? They see the Fantastic Four as an excellent example of how the bond of family, whether by blood, by marriage, or by other means, can transcend nearly any difficulty. But in the case of the Fantastic Four, what is it that's held them together for so long, despite numerous breakups and substitutions? I mean, is it Reed Richards' guilt over how he nearly killed the people he loved, disfiguring one of them horribly? Is it Ben's loyalty to his friends that keeps the whole thing together, acting as a reminder of the price of failure? Or, you know, is it something else? The book, much like the science books about superheroes that I've read, aims to accomplish something very, very important, to show that there are lessons to be learned from comic books, that they aren't just mindless entertainment for empty-headed children. Questions of good and evil aside, I enjoyed some of the more unexpected philosophical questions. I mean, what is identity, for example, and how can we morally hold Bruce Banner responsible for the crimes of the Hulk? How does Barbara Gordon exemplify moral perfectionism? And of the female X-Men, what do they tell us about women and heroics? Is it ethically permissible for a hero to have a secret identity, and the maintenance of which requires lying to the people she loves the most? These aren't questions that occur to the average comic book reader, I'm sure, but the average comic book reader should be able to instantly understand them. More importantly, he, statistically speaking, should be able to understand why they need to be asked. Superheroes are us, writ larger. Their problems are our problems, only bigger, faster, and looking much, much better in form-fitting clothes. We must all struggle with the questions of doing good in this world and how far our responsibility to the world extends. We all try to balance different parts of ourselves, our secret identities that divide the different people we are from day to day. We ask ourselves about who we are and what it is about ourselves today that makes us different from who we were yesterday or 10 years ago. Classical philosophy suggests that humans all tend towards wanting to do the right thing, and I agree, with some reservations. The thing is, doing the right thing is often hard, and doing the wrong thing is often, well, so much easier. In order to be good humans, we must ask ourselves these questions about right and wrong and good and evil, responsibility and plain old selfishness. And if Daredevil or Spider-Man, Wonder Woman, or Barbara Gordon are able to serve as models for the best decisions we can make, then I see no reason why we should not follow their examples. So let me give you a quote from this book. It's the essay by Jeff Loeb and Tom Morris from Heroes and Superheroes. Jeff Loeb is famous for writing the wonderful Batman story, Hush, which looks at Batman specifically and his circle of friends. And Loeb and Morris say, "The more power we get, the more avidly we tend to serve ourselves and our own interests. But this is where the superheroes stand apart. They realize that there is no real self-fulfillment without self-giving. They understand that we have our talents and our powers in order to use them, and that to use them for the good of others as well as ourselves is the highest use we can make of them." So that is from Superheroes and Philosophy. It's a really fun book. It doesn't get too heavy if you're not, you know, familiar with a lot of basic and or advanced philosophical concepts. Don't worry, you won't be too lost. I mean, I wasn't. If I can make my way through the book, then so can you. I guarantee that. But it does give you something to think about. And the next time you read a superhero comic book, you might ask yourself questions that are philosophical in nature. If you're lucky, then you can answer them. So well done there. Anyway. Next week is the Dresden Files. It is the last Thursday in the month. Can you believe it? We're almost done with January. This time thing has got to be stopped. I don't know who's put who up to it, but it's getting on my nerves. So next week is a Dresden week. We are up to the book Deadbeat. So let me give you a bit of trivia. And my question for you is this. Who is buried under Harry's floor? There you go. Bet you didn't know Harry had someone buried under his floor. If you can tell me who it is, then congratulations, you are a winner. You can get a t-shirt that has the word winner printed on it and wear it very, very proudly. With that, I think I will let you go. This will be a nice short podcast. You can get on with your day. I'm sure you have many busy things to do. I have more reading to do. I've been reading some science, which is a nice refresher, after finishing The Wheel of Time. And might I say, by the way, and I eventually will get into a real proper review cycle with The Wheel of Time, but let me tell you this. I am very happy with the work that Brandon Sanderson has done. I think he will continue to do fine work, and I look forward to the next two books. So if you're a Wheel of Time fan and you still haven't read The Gathering Storm, you really should. It's good. Trust me. You'll be happy. Okay, with that, let me let you go. Thank you, as always, for coming back, and I will see you, as always, next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelabyrinthlibrary.blogspot.com, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you'd like to recommend, I'd be happy to hear it. If you would like to send me some email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes or become a fan on Facebook. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week, and until then, keep reading.